Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. We hope you had a Merry Christmas, a wonderful Kwanzaa, and a very Happy New Year. And joining me again via Skype is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders have a lot to be thankful and happy for this new year.
Yeah, absolutely. That was as great a like holiday stretch as I can remember, actually. I was listening to a little bit of the Buffalo game on the radio. I was driving home from my parents' house on New Year's Eve before I finished my evening with the very exciting. I have a pretty bad cold, and I watched Ken Burns' The Roosevelts for my New Year's Eve while my fiance was working overnight at, in the ER, and so I was listening to Chris King, and he was talking about how his most memorable Islander game was in 2000 Islander New Year game was 2002 when Jason Blake scored a overtime winner in a 1-0 shootout. Excuse me, 1-0 overtime win over the Sabres. And I can honestly, I was like, I think I remember that game, and I think I listened to that game on the radio. So I'm pretty sure I heard Chris King call that.
That's
game.
Pretty funny.
But you could just tell in his voice. I mean, he's obviously always very upbeat and happy. And but even in him and Greg Pickard, the way they were calling the games, like it was just like house money at that point after the Toronto game, obviously.
Yeah.
And they were calling the game like from such a happy thing, and it clicked to me. So when I got back to watch the third on TV, I noticed it in Brendan and Butch too, and I feel like that really reflects how we all feel right now as Islander fans.
Oh, for sure. It's definitely as good a time to be an Islander fan as I can remember. Real quick, I remember a game against the Blackhawks that they played on New Year's Eve, and my friend and I were in college, and you know, we were kind of getting to that point where we could go out and have fun and do stuff, and like, you know, you kind of want to like have these sort of wild New Year's Eve parties that you heard about. And we spent that evening in my basement, me watching the Islanders playing the Blackhawks, and him asleep in like a chair off to the side of my couch. So that I remember looking over at him and being like, this is New Year's Eve. I don't understand. This is supposed to be fun. Why are we here? This is my fault that I made him watch this game. But anyway, that's this was definitely a good New Year's Eve. The Islanders did beat the Sabres in Buffalo. But let's back up to a couple weeks ago when we last spoke. The Islanders were coming off two pretty huge wins, one in Colorado and then one a night later in Glendale. They held the high-flying Avalanche to one goal. They beat the Coyotes, giving up only one goal. Next night, things were looking up. They waltzed into Vegas a couple of nights later, and they got their butts kind of handed to them. They had a two-goal lead that they kind of didn't deserve. The Golden Knights stormed back with three straight goals and outshot the Islanders 47-21, and they lost. Thomas Greiss was pretty good in that game, but as Barry Trotz said, they didn't have enough battle, so there you go. And, you know, all of a sudden you kind of come down from the high of the two games before. Actually, they had won three in a row at that point. But then they had a game Sunday in Dallas, another high-flying team, another road game just before the Christmas break. And wouldn't you know, the Islanders played great. They held Dallas to 20 shots on goal. They won that game 3-1. They had a 3-1 road trip, which is, I mean, as good as you could possibly get without, you know, getting a sweep. It was the first game in the NHL for Devon Taves. He looked really good. Josh Hosang, once again, looked pretty good. Had a little bit of luck. Casey Zekas scored a really weird goal off the back of Anton Hudobin's uniform, I guess. Kind of went in. But, hey, that stuff is going to happen. And but they played great. They deserve to win that game. We're going to talk a lot about the Stars later because they just basically melted down completely after that game. I don't know how much the Islanders had to do with that, but it's kind of fun to see. But, yeah, so 3-1 road trip. Christmas break leads to back-to-back games, one at home versus the Ottawa Senators, one on the road in Toronto. The game against the Senators was pretty great. The Senators jumped out to a 2-1 lead, a 2-0 lead. They had a 3-1 lead at one point. Things were kind of disjointed. Barry Trotz said every team looks like that after a four-day break after Christmas. But the Islanders just had an amazing third period. Johnny Boychuk scored. Matt Barzal had two goals. They outshot the Senators for the game 39-27. There was a bunch of fights. A couple of Senators got hurt. Stan Fischer was on a TV. Turned out to be really great. And they won 6-3, which was pretty huge because the next night they went to Toronto. Now, we're going to talk a lot about this game. I said I wasn't going to watch it. I'm a man of my word. I did not watch the game. I wasn't even on the internet at all that day. I didn't want to see anything. I didn't want to hear anything. I don't want to know anything. We went to go see we watched a Harry Potter movie. We watched a bunch of stuff in my house. I completely forgot the game was going on. Around 11 o'clock, I turned in. 4-0 Islanders. Matt Barzal hat trick. The Leafs essentially had nothing. Everybody was happy. We'll talk a lot about more about this later. But yeah, huge, huge, huge win that like literally cannot be overstated from the Islanders' point of view. And then just to finish off the road trip, we kind of afraid that it was such a great game against the Leafs that we thought there might be a letdown in Buffalo on New Year's Eve. There was not. 3-1 Islanders win. Yeah, they were kind of sloppy. Not the best. Robin Leonard was outstanding. Third period was pretty bad for the Islanders. The Sabres outshot them 13-3. But they got a bunch of goals. And again, Leonard was absolutely outstanding in his return to Buffalo. And just like that, the Islanders have won 7 of 8 and are now confident in their ability to secure a playoff game. Let's just go right to the Leafs game. I mean, obviously, I know you watched it. So what were your thoughts about it as it was happening? It must have been pretty wild.
Yeah, I really thought leading up to it, just like reading the kind of quotes from Tavares and everybody in the pregame and the night before. They both played the night before. So like the postgame scrums for both teams were kind of just basically about the next game and what it meant. And then Tavares was just basically saying what he would say, you know, if he was an Islander, you know, same thing, stuck to his robot script and said it was like any other game. And then Barry Trotz had that quote that like just kind of is in this unbelievable first chapter of him being an Islander that he's writing. That was one of the best quotes I've ever heard, talking about how, you know, that this should hurt, like that should hurt. And I just can't think. I'm like, I don't know if any other coach, maybe outside of the guy he was coaching against that night, and maybe like, you know, Joe Quenneville or some of the other kind of old school guys, would say something like that. And he said like, he didn't want to be their teammate anymore, and that should hurt. And I was totally expecting Trotz to follow the same script as, you know, Tavares and stuff, because that's what, you know, we're used to as sports fans these days. This is, everybody sticks to a very PC script and doesn't really waver off it. And that didn't happen. And I don't know what other people thought about that quote. I don't know if you had saw it before, but I thought that, you know, going into the game made me realize, oh, the Islanders actually are not taking this like any other game. They feel what we do as fans. So, I don't know if I'm out on an island in that thinking, but I mean, that just jacked me up beyond belief.
I actually had to, I was just showing my wife this, I had to move my Tao of Trotz document from the notes pad on my phone to an actual spreadsheet because I had too many and I wanted to keep the sources and the events happening. And again, it's my fault for missing it because I was definitely off of the internet all day. So I did not see that, but I think I'm looking at it right now. Trotz said, I think that the whole decision in the summer, that's a personal decision between John and his family and what have you. He's got a lot of good friends in our room, but I think at the same time, they have to be a little bit hurt that he decided to, you know, they understand it, but they'd like to have him as a teammate. And he decided that he didn't need them as teammates anymore. That's pretty pointed and it's par for the course for what Trotz has said. I mean, again, I have a whole list here that, I mean, we've barely gotten to scratch the surface and he had a couple of really good ones. We're going to talk about what he said, to Elliot Friedman after that win against the Leafs. But, you know, it's just after the game, there was a lot of gifs around of Tavares looking frustrated and tired and kind of over it, which we've seen a lot from his days as an Islander, but it was kind of cool to see on the other side. The Leafs didn't really have much in the game. And again, whatever they did have, Robin Leonard was there to stop it. I don't think anybody expected them to get shut out. But to get that win for the Islanders was enormous. Again, it cannot be overstated. I promised myself I wasn't going to read the internet before the game. And then, of course, after the game, I completely, totally made the same mistake I said I wasn't going to make and read all kinds of stuff and got myself all flustered for no reason. A couple of things I found really interesting was Arthur Staples said that it was a statement win for the Islanders. And he's 100% right, of course. The Islanders' statement was, hello, we continue to exist. And the response statement from the Leafs and their fans and their media was, we don't care. That has not changed. That basically corroborates what I said in our last episode, which was that these people don't care about us. We're nothing to them. They don't care about our team. They don't follow our team. They certainly don't care about their fan base. And they made it seem like not that big a deal. I mean, somebody posted what Steve Dangle said. I honestly could care less. Ken Campbell apparently had some nice thing to say. Again, I couldn't care less. But it does mean a lot. And they can say it doesn't, and it does. And John Cotoveras can say it doesn't, but I'm sure it does. That was pretty wild. But, I mean, your emotions as you're watching it must have been, like, completely through the roof, right?
Oh, yeah. And I just think the way the first period was going, I was like, the Islanders are going to score first. Just the way that they were playing, it felt like they weren't really afraid of going down. Nothing. It was weird. They were kind of taking the game to the Leafs, at least, just from the way I was watching it. And then just the way the first goal happened with Filppula.
Right.
I mean, kind of plowed
through two guys and, like, scored on a really nice shot, too, considering he had two guys just on top of him.
and it was just exhale after that. Like, because, he got a decent, like, lucky bounce there where it kind of ping-ponged off Hainsey and someone else. But it just made me feel so much better. And then, you go into the second period with the 1-0 lead, and, I felt greedy. I was like, we should be up one or two more.
Right.
Garrett Sparks played well, I thought.
Yeah, so did Mike Babcock, actually. Yeah. He thought he played well, too.
and he made, he might not have, his save percentage might not have been great, but he made some point-blank saves on a bunch of really good opportunities. And then there was one shift before Barzal scored his first goal where I saw him, I was like, he's got, he just got a look in his eye. Like, he's got this, this is what you could tell, Matt Barzal is into these kind of things. Like, he had a great quote after the game, calling the Air Canada Center the quote-unquote so-called Mecca. Mm. Like, he knows. He's definitely someone who knew what this game meant and wanted to live up to it and did and thrived in that game, doing, basically put his – he's like, hey, the Islanders do exist. I play for the Islanders, and here's what I can do, and it can beat you. I could beat you by myself on my best night. And he kind of did. Obviously the whole team played well. Robin Leonard played great, but, there was a good 10-minute stretch that every time Matt Barzal was on the ice, the Leafs just did not have an answer.
Yeah.
And you just are like, this guy is an absolute whirlwind. last year I always talked about how I want him to, skate around with a rose in between his teeth, and I really want him to do that because it's just, mesmerizing to watch him, especially when he's on like he was. And geez, and I felt like the Islanders were, a half step behind him, his line mates, who are usually, he's got great chemistry, obviously, with Beauvillier, but they were, almost Barzal watching a little bit because he was just so impressive.
I forget if it was the second or the third goal where it was a 2-on-1 with Barzal and Beauvillier, and Barzal just took the shot, and you could see that Beauvillier was almost like, you got it, man, go for it, and just took it. We talked a couple of weeks ago about how it looked like Barzal was kind of coming around. The game against the Red Wings at the Coliseum, I think it was that one, might have been the one before too, where it looked like Barzal was kind of getting back up to speed, kind of getting back to that same form that he won the Calder Trophy with last year. And he is absolutely doing that now. He is in that mode right now. He's got 5 goals. He had 5 goals in 2 days, and he was the second star of the week. And he also is now an all-star. He was selected as the Islanders' representative for the Metro Division team in the all-star. Anders Lee can still get voted in, so go to NHL.com, I guess, and vote for Anders Lee. I enjoy the game itself, but the whole voting for these kinds of wacky teams is completely insane, so I don't really get how it's working. But if you can vote for Anders Lee somewhere, go do that, because he deserves it too. It was definitely a statement game. It was definitely the kind of thing that the Islanders had circled on their calendar. The recap at Pension Plan Puppets, our friends, was like, didn't any of the Leafs care about John Tavares playing his old team? I guess that kind of sums up their view of things. I did think it was funny, though. Before the game and after the game, two pieces on The Athletic, one by Pierre LeBrun before the game, one by James Myrtle after the game.
I was really hoping you were going to bring up the Myrtle after the game.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. They both positioned the game as sort of like Lou Lamoriello versus Kyle Dubas, and like Lou coming back to the team that he built. And I think these two kinds of stories kind of illustrate exactly how far these guys have their heads up their asses, because I can't imagine. I mean this in the nicest possible way, because we're New York fans. We know how New York fans think. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the vast majority of Islanders fans do not know and do not care who the general manager of the Maple Leafs is. Do you know any Yankees fans that know who the GM of the Kansas City Royals is? I mean, besides you, like, nobody does, right? They just don't.
Right.
And so this was a game about, and Mike Carver has said it on Twitter, and he was 100% right. This was a game about the Islanders going into the town that basically wrote them off back in the summer and shoving it up their asses. That is what the game was about. You can say whatever you want, but this is not about Lou Lamoriello versus Kyle Dubas. And the funny thing about the LeBron article, and then you can go off on the Myrtle article. The funny thing about the LeBron article is that Lamoriello kept saying, no, it's not about me. It's not about me. And that's what he wrote anyway. And it's like, dude, it's really not. This is about these players saying, dude, we are here and we are a hockey team and we can win some games regardless of losing this guy or not. The Myrtle article was kind of the same thing, and it just went around and around, and it was just, I don't know, kind of stupid.
Yeah, the first of all, Myrtle, like, I was loving it because he definitely walked into that arena that day and was just like, I'm going to write the best John Tavares, you know, shoves it or shows his former team what they're missing piece ever. It's going to, like, glisten with his love for Toronto. The city celebrates him. I was just like, and then the Islanders burned that script right in front of his face. And he changed course. And then he did the same. He also tweeted in the middle of the game, which I thought was amazing, because you could tell how much it hurt. He's like, the Maple Leafs are being booed for the first time this season. Yeah, yeah, all right. I'm sure that's true. Yeah. Anyway, but then he goes into the article again, and he did the same thing that he did in the summer, where he's like, these two teams never had a reason to hate each other. And he put, like, what is it, in a positive with the commas, linked to Down Goes Brown, the other one of the 700 Maple Leafs writers on that site. And it's like, except for one, like, playoff series 16 years ago, which he just hyperlinked to. And he's like, the sentence is so wrong, because he said, these teams don't have a reason to hate each other. It's like, one team had a reason to hate each other. They hate the other one long ago. Mm. The Islander fans, as we see now, are never going to forget, you know, what happened with Tavares. And they never, you can ask any Islander fan over the age of, you know, 15 or whatever, I guess a little older than that, you know, 20, who Darcy Tucker is. And they're like, oh, I hate Darcy Tucker.
Absolutely.
Because you have to hate Darcy. Yeah. And he's just like, it just goes to show how little grasp that these guys have on. And that includes the team that he loves and drools over, like, that their history a little bit. Sure, like, there's bigger moments for the Maple Leafs, but that is a huge moment for Islander fans, because it was a first series back in the playoffs and whatever. So it just goes to show you how little that these guys actually do pay attention. And that was the like you said, the whole point is, like, we do exist. And reading them that these guys are still missing the point, which was right out in front of everyone, and their own colleague Arthur Staple got, you know, obviously very, very correctly, is just makes me so happy that, like, how little these guys get it, and they won't ever get it. And that's why, and the other thing too is, like, the Islanders showed up and they are so hard to beat every night. Every night the Islanders are hard to beat. So, you know, God forbid they play the Maple Leafs in the playoffs. Like, these writers are going to be petrified, because you have to beat a team that's very hard to beat 4 out of 7 times. And, like, yeah, the Maple Leafs have the Islanders on talent by leaps and bounds, and so do basically, you know, 75% of the conference. But I don't know, maybe there's two other teams in the conference, the Bruins and the Lightning, and I guess you can also say the Capitals, because they're still doing it, that are harder to beat on a nightly basis than the Islanders. And I'm not saying, like, talent wise or whatever. I'm just saying, like, they make you earn every inch of the ice and make you earn every point against them. And it's never been that way. Maybe since the Laviolette days.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Arthur and the entire Staple family on their latest edition. He's taking some time off to do his dad thing, and we're very happy for them, and hope that glad everybody's happy and healthy. But yeah, he had a great line again before the game. I guess in a somewhat of a response to the LeBron piece. But I'll read it here. This is Staple saying, mystified at folks who want to tell Islanders fans how to feel about all this, same as the summer. The passion is what makes these things interesting. I bet even the current Isles who went to Tavares' wedding want to make him eat it tonight. Their passion is what makes them special. They just don't get it. And again, they're never going to get it because they don't care about this team and they don't pay attention to what's going on. LeBron in his piece was like, it's, you know, judging from social media, it's surprising how many Islanders fans are still angry about this. And I'm like, Pierre, you are one of the people that told us every time Tavares said he wanted to stay as an Islander and then he left. Like, whose quotes were we reading when Tavares is like, no, I want to stay. I want to win here. I love it here. And then he leaves. Like, who were we reading there if not Pierre LeBrun? Like, don't you get, like, they don't get it. They really don't. I mean, that's what you said. They just don't get the point. They're completely missing the point. We read
these. And it's amazing, too, because these are the guys who, like, oh, why can't, like, hockey catch on with a casual fan or whatever? It's because people like you don't let this passion, like, shine through. Right. Like, this is, you know, this should be, like, you should be writing about the hostile environment that this guy's going to come into in a month and a half and be like, you know, that's, you know, what makes hockey great. It's like, look at these fans. Mm. And instead, it's just like, oh, you know, he went home. Yeah. Like, God,
they're going to be very surprised when they go to that game. I hope they do. I hope they don't, like, just not show up. But I hope they really do go to that game at the Coliseum. And I hope that they feel the same fear that these guys are going to fear when they play there. But, it was a huge game. And I mean, there's no cutting around it. I mean, this was it. Now, look, it's one game. I mean, play Debbie Downer. It's one game. The Islanders came out on top in a big way. They have another game against the Leafs at the in Toronto. I don't know when. Then obviously they have two games at the Coliseum, one in, I guess, the end of February, and then one on April 1st, I believe, as well. And those games could go either way. I mean, for all we know, the Leafs could trounce the Islanders in all three of them. And the same things that we're talking about, they didn't get to write, they will get to write at that point. But to have this one and to have it on Hockey Night in Canada, Saturday night, just before Christmas, in front of the entire world, must have felt good to these guys. And, you know, they like Staples said, they want, and they're friends with Tavares, but they want to shove it down his throat. And I mean, a lot of these guys are from Toronto. They want to go back there and be like, yeah, well, we did kind of shut you guys out that one time. So, you know, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I kept trying to reel myself back in, saying, oh, 2 points. It's just, you know, it's a regular season win, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm like giving in to what these guys want me to do. Like, this, that was a season defining win, by leaps and bounds, going to be probably the most memorable win of the season, you know, or it is at least at this point, depending on how things go later. Obviously, that will change, but like for this point. Like, to this point, it's just like, I can't remember an Islander regular season win that, you know, felt as good as that one did. And you could just tell from the way Butch and Brandon were calling the game, the way that people were, you know, talking on Twitter. I tried so hard not to jinx anything. So I was like, I was also, you know, streaming the game. I was like just really nervous about, like, you know, just messing with any juju on doing anything, getting ahead of myself. And then after the second period, I felt like I could kind of, you know, relax a little bit and just reading everything that was coming in, which just felt good. Cause you're like, you know, like, I don't know anybody, like almost anybody we interact with on Twitter, you know, from Islanders Twitter. I love them all because they're great Islander fans, but like seeing them happy made me so happy because it was like, these people were genuinely hurt. And this is just a little bit making that go away. And That is like worth its weight in gold. Yeah. 2 points aside.
No, for sure. So. Yeah. No, it was.
And the Islanders are also good. Which is, you know, just the cherry on top.
They're good in a way that is really sustainable. We talked early in the season about how a lot of it was kind of driven by luck or maybe great saves, and the team hadn't quite coalesced into kind of, you know. And I was actually looking over some old Trotz press conferences now, and, you know, he was getting frustrated with, like, we didn't play the right way, you guys weren't running the right routes, they were all over the place. But they're getting to the point where they're playing more consistently in this system, and this works for them. And it's you can see our friend Carrie Haber is talking about online, and this was mentioned in The Athletic too. So, you know, in fairness, the Dom over there had some nice things to say about the Islanders in a recent column about how their possession stats are getting better, and they're actually starting to play now in a way that can, you know, sort of predict success a little bit. And are they the most talented team in the league? Hell no, they're not. They got that now. Actually, it's funny because injuries are starting to creep up with them. A couple of guys left that Buffalo game. Valtteri Filppula, Jordan Eberle is hurt now. I mean, Andrew Ladd's been hurt. Thomas Hickey's been hurt, which is what allowed Devon Taves to come up, which, you know, we talked about, sucks to see Thomas Hickey hurt, but Taves have been playing well. So we'll see how they react to those those injuries. But as of right now, the Islanders are 1 point behind the Habs for eighth in the Eastern Conference. That's outstanding. I mean, you can't tell me that like halfway through the season now, the 38 games, and they've got games in hand on pretty much everybody except for the Caps at this point, that you wouldn't take that. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, you know, just because a bunch of people from Toronto were like, well, you know, it's just a regular season game. It doesn't really mean much. Don't let that distract you from enjoying this and having fun with this, because, you know, right now life is good. I mean, they're playing really well. They got their January schedule. I keep hearing about how easy it is, but I look at every game as a potential disaster. Tomorrow night, or I guess Thursday night, probably the day you're going to hear this, they're going to play the Blackhawks at Nassau Coliseum on NBCSN. Brendan Burke, AJ Molesko, both members of the Islanders broadcast crew, are going to have the call there. So it's on NBCSN. So I guess that means no Pierre Maguire. So be happy about that, too.
I'm actually a little upset about that because he, you know, I would love to hear what Pierre would have to say about after that loss for his beloved John Tavares and stuff.
But well, maybe next time.
It's all right, you know. So yeah. When they're on NBCSN, the playoffs, exactly.
And then they have the Blues at Barclays on Saturday, and then next week they got the Hurricanes, who again, it feels like they play the Hurricanes every week this season so far, and then back to back games against the Rangers. So, you know, they're going to want to take a chunk out of the Rangers, currently 5 points behind the Islanders after getting their asses handed to them by the Penguins 7-2 tonight at the Garden. I mean, like we said at the top, it's just right now this is good. And look, there's still half a season to go, and the Islanders could potentially still miss the playoffs. They're fighting, you know, four or five. But Trotz said the win against the Sabres was, I mean, we're talking for 20 minutes about the Leafs game, but the win against the Sabres was equally as important, if not more important, because this is a team they're going to be chasing for that final playoff spot. Their eyes are on the playoffs right now. They're trying to make these things. So if you were on Team Tank, I'm sorry to tell you, that's probably not in the cards. But this playing the Sabres are a team that the Islanders are going to have to play and catch for one of those final playoff spots. And they beat them. And that's, you know, there was no letdown after the Leafs game. Again, they didn't play well. Hey, you know what? It's third game in four nights. It was New Year's Eve. You know, I guess what are you going to do? But they came out with the win. Again, they stuck with the game plan. They came out with the win, and that's what's important. And if they're going to keep doing stuff like that, they're going to be hanging around for another couple of months, and it's going to be pretty wild to see, you know, how nervous they can make the rest of the league with play like that.
I was so impressed that they won that game against the Sabres, because we talked about a couple of weeks ago about like that Rangers hangover that used to always plague the Islanders, and you know it's just the type of thing that you always expect the Islanders, you know. Because we all made the deal before. We're like, if we win this game, I don't care about the Sabres game, you know? And then you go into it, and you're like, I would love to see this team not have a letdown. And you just see that it's the difference between, and it's a Trotz effect. It could be, you know, it might be just an organizational thing from Lamoriello down, that they were just not going to let this team do that. Like, that was not the most impressive game, but they had enough guys show up and carry the load from, you know, maybe some guys were, you know, feeling the bit of a hangover. Obviously, they did lose Filppula in the first like first minute of the game, basically. So that was just like a masterclass in what a winning team does in a season. You know, they don't the Penguins. You know, when they're still very good, obviously, but when they were, you know, in their heyday a couple of years ago, they probably, you know, played the Flyers and had brawls all over the place, and it was, you know, these in the Capitals, and then the next game they probably beat the shit out of the Islanders because, you know, that's what good teams do. They don't have these letdown games. And I was like just over the moon. Obviously, it's just like that carryover effect from the Leafs game and to winning that game, and then it just felt so good.
Yeah.
And another thing that feels good about it is like we've talked a little bit about Taves and Dal Col and Hossein.
Yeah, yeah. Like, forgot about Dal Col. He's still up too. Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like the rug is going to come out from under the Islanders. And I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not going to, you know, they're going to make the playoffs, but like there's reinforcements in this team. I think still like lacking depth at center. I saw Arthur Staples saying, you know, Tom Pyatt could be a good cheap replacement for Valtteri Filppula. Respectfully, you know, don't
yeah. want to. Well, he got traded. Didn't want to do that. Ain't happening.
Yeah. So yeah, thank God. Yeah. But like there's very with Taves and now the fact, like, I don't think there's any chance Taves goes down. Like, you know, so we'll have seven defensemen who are all able. This is,
yeah,
the Islanders are as good a spot in this point of the season than probably the year they played the Capitals in the last Coliseum.
Big difference between that year and this year. I agree with you 100%. The big difference between that year and this year, currently the Islanders are number one in the league in goals against. They've only given up 102 goals, two goals better than
the
Predators.
That is a miracle.
Yeah.
That's a flat-out sporting miracle,
I
think.
It is. They're,
I was talking to a couple people at work, and you know they hear me talk about Barry Trotz and like how much I love him. I think he might be the second best coach in all of sports in the world.
I mean, it's
after Pep Guardiola. I don't understand. And I can't think of anybody who's done something that impressive.
It's pretty wild. Like, they're middle of the pack offense wise, but I mean, and I saw some people saying today, like, I mean, it's taken them half a season to figure it out, but people are suddenly starting to notice, like, holy cow, these guys who gave up like the most goals a team has given up in 10 years are currently leading the league in goals against. Like, that's unbelievable.
That's a miracle.
Right. And the goalies and the goalie coaches deserve some credit there too. But
yeah,
you know, without Trotz's defensive systems, that they're all not doing that kind of
thing. And you can say they kind of down, like, I've got nothing but respect for Robin Leonard and the way he's playing this season. Like, I think he's been unbelievably good, but you can say that on paper they downgraded in goal and they're still doing that. Yaro Halak, Robin Leonard, I think if you went around to everybody in the league, say you can have one of these guys, they'd all take Yaro Halak.
Sure. Oh, yeah, given Leonard's track record, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Speaking of Halak, I was a little – and this is our good segue. I was a little sad that he didn't play in the Winter Classic on New Year's Day for the Bruins. When I saw Tuukka Rask lead the Bruins out, I was like, well, I guess that's the way it goes. You know, what are you going to do? I was kind of hoping to see Yaro out there. The game itself was at Notre Dame Stadium. It was fine. I thought it was totally okay. I know we're all sick of the Blackhawks being in these Winter Classic games, and you know there's lots of jokes going on, and I've made them myself. But it was kind of cool to see Cam Ward playing for the Blackhawks because he had spent his entire career playing for a team that, much like the Islanders, will never get a shot at a Winter Classic. So I was happy for him. But the Blackhawks lost, and the Bruins won. But what's fun? Did you watch a game at all? Or were you too sick?
No, I didn't really watch it. I was just hallucinating from my cold at that point.
Well, I mean, you didn't miss anything. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. And that's the thing. Like,
right, exactly.
I haven't watched any NBC games at all this year. And I was a little disappointed to see, although not surprised, to see that the production is exactly the same every single time. Like, the flybys are the same. The voices are the same. Mike Milbury's out there with his shoulders up around his ears, and he's like, "Oh, these guys got to play harder," you know, the whole thing. Jeremy Roenick's like doing stunt garbage in the stands, and it's weird. But the forced nostalgia. The outdoor games are cool. Like, they get people's attention. It's a cool thing the NHL does. They should market it, and people should really like it. And it, you know, there are people out there that never watch hockey games. Maybe that will be the one hockey game they watch this during the course of the year. But the way the nostalgia is forced, I think, turns a lot of people off. And my thing was, like, Doc Emmerich is talking in the open about how he grew up in Indiana and Notre Dame was always a big deal. And here he is standing on the same sidelines that Newt Rockne won all these national championships in the 1930s. And Eddie Olczyk comes on and he's talking about how, what did he say? He was talking about something else that happened like 100 years ago. And I'm like, do you think any of these Blackhawks care? Like, whose nostalgia are we talking about here? Like, it's just... Do you think Blackhawks defenseman Gustav Forsling cares about Newt Rockne in the 30s winning national championship? No, he doesn't. It's a cool outdoor hockey game.
He's just happy he's getting to wear a new jersey and play on it.
Yeah, he gets to take his kids out for a skate or something or whatever. And it's like, I just, you know, it's always the NHLs always do this thing. Like, they have this great sport and they're always marketing it in the worst possible way. Like, why are we talking about Newt Rockne right now? I don't understand. But
it blows my mind because I think if you put any hockey fan, you know, from anywhere in the hockey sphere, you know, in NHL universe, basically, they could be 14 or they could be 80. And you said, all right, I want you to kind of be the director of marketing and how this broadcast should look. They would get it right. they'd be like, oh yeah, no, this is very easy to do. Like, this is it. Like, it's hockey's very, this is going to be aesthetically nice to look at because it's outdoors. So like, we can kind of like trim the fat off of this broadcast. We don't need Doc Emmerich doing a montage, like talking over a montage of players skating on ponds from like in like Alberta again, the same one we use every time. And, you know, I just it just blows my mind that this league just mails. I guess they do mail it. Like they're just like, all right, let's just roll with what
yeah, they have a script and they're sticking to it. And it's the same script every year. Yeah, it's the same script every year. And no matter where it happens, and you know, again, it's you've got this huge spectacle and you just keep doing it the same old way. Now, next year's Winter Classic they've announced is going to be in Dallas in the Cotton Bowl. And then there's going to be a Stadium Series game in Colorado at the Air Force Academy with the Avalanche. We don't know who's going to be playing the Avalanche in that game and the Stars in another game. It probably won't be the Blackhawks. And the fact that the NHL had to come out and say that tells you pretty much one of the big problems with this whole format is that like people expect them to play the Blackhawks, but they're not. You know, I guess the Stars will probably end up playing Minnesota if there's any justice in the world, but you know, they could be playing anybody. And for the U.S. Air Force, you know, maybe they play the Golden Knights or something like that because Bill Foley's all about the Army and things like that. But it's just like, you know, can they change it up? Like, are they going to be talking about, you know?
No, you're gonna tune in tomorrow to tomorrow's broadcast, and you're going to be like, it's just going to be basically a – even though the Islanders are going to have the play-by-play guy, their own play-by-play guy calling it, it's just going to be talking about the Blackhawks. Yeah.
And, you know, as I was watching the game too, I was getting angry because my wife was sitting there, and I was like, "There's one guy in the NHL who can effectively communicate how important Notre Dame Stadium is, and it's Islanders captain Anders Lee. And guess what? He ain't there, even though he went to Notre Dame for 4 years. And you know, he is the guy. I mean, they could have flown him out there and done like a." You know, intermission thing, right? I mean, I know he's not playing in the game, but still, like, it would have been.
Yeah, they could have had him record something, I guess, too. Yeah, but it's.
Yeah, no.
They don't think like
no,
that.
No, not at all. So, and, you know, it's not that he's like the Islanders captain or anything, but whatever. So that kind of chapped my hide a little bit. But again, the game itself was fine, and then I turned it off when it was done. Okay, a couple other league notes to get to. The Oilers made a couple of trades, which is like Christmas for everybody, basically, because they never work out right. They traded for Brandon Manning, the defenseman who broke Connor McDavid's collarbone a couple of years ago. God, this is a move only the Oilers could pull off. They traded a couple of guys. I don't know if the Oilers are going to be any better. They're probably not. They traded for a couple of fifth defensemen. The GM was like, "We traded for a couple of fifth defensemen." I don't know what they expect to get. Stat of the year in the NHL is that Milan Lucic, Mr. $6 million something a year, big, angry, hulking Milan Lucic, had 2 goals in the calendar year of 2018. 2 goals. That's two more goals than your eye scored in the NHL this year. So that's pretty wild. And then, but what's funny about these trades that I'm sure aren't going to help the Oilers is that Pierre LeBrun, again, in a different article, was like, "I don't know why these Oilers fans get all mad because of these two minor trades that their team made." And I'm like, Pierre, it's not these two trades. It's the 4 years that they've had the best player in the league and they haven't done anything with him. That's why people are mad. They're not mad that the Oilers got Brandon Manning. They're mad that they don't have Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, you name it. Who else? Like, I don't know. I just don't get him. I'm sure LeBrun's a nice guy and I hate to pick on him, but geez, come on, man. Give me a break.
Pick on him all you want because it's just like ignorance. Mm. You are supposed to be like this overarching, you know, source or whatever you want to say, like the guy that we're supposed to want to read every day, and you are just failing.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, those trades, like when there's a new thing I do now, basically, whenever I see an Oilers trade pop up on Twitter, is like I just like click on whoever I see it from first. I'm like, all right, make sure this person's real because that can't be. They did not trade for Brandon Manning. Just a couple. He almost ruined Connor McDavid's
career. Right,
but they did, yeah. And. Yeah, it's really great because, you know, it's just makes you think, oh my God, the Islanders are in a better position than the team with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, the Oilers have this amazing ability, or I should say Peter Chiarelli, the GM, has this amazing ability to not only trade for worse players, but more expensive players that are also worse. So Manning makes more than the two guys that they traded. Who was the other guy that they got now? I can't remember.
It was Alex
Petrovic. Oh, yeah, Alex Petrovic. So Manning and Petrovic both, Petrovic coming from the Panthers, both those guys have been healthy scratched like multiple times by their teams, both of whom are worse teams than the Oilers. I don't know about the Panthers for sure, but the Blackhawks definitely had a worse record than the Oilers did. So, and they're more expensive. So you've traded for guys that are worse playing on worse teams that are more expensive than the guys you trade. They traded Drake Kajula forward. You know, seems like a pretty okay depth forward. Apparently a good friend of Connor McDavid. That's a good thing to do. Trade a friend of the captain for the guy who broke his collarbone. So, yeah, the Oilers doing Oilers things is always fun. Like I said, it's Christmas for hockey fans everywhere. And then we also had the Dallas Stars, who CEO, right, the president, a guy named Jim Lights, came out a couple of weeks ago, just after we recorded our last show, and called the performances of Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin this year fucking horseshit. Those are his exact words. He called this, like, press availability. One reporter showed up with Sean Shapiro of The Athletic, and, man, Lights just let these two guys have it in a candid way that we never hear about before. And it was pretty startling, and I don't know if it really the Stars have won both games since that meltdown. Seguin and Benn have both been like, well, he's right, we got to play better, and they've kind of taken the high road. But the NHLPA is involved. They're, like, you know, trying to, I don't know, file a grievance or something and said that that was wrong. And a lot of Stars fans feel embarrassed that this has happened. And Jamie Benn was like, I don't play for the president. I play for my teammates and that kind of stuff. And it's just like, you almost like had to read it a couple of times because you're like, I never see stuff like this in the NHL, especially, like, oh my God, to call a guy's performance fucking horseshit to a reporter on the record. That's crazy. Like, I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. The headline, you were just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's not right. Yeah. I still haven't, like, kind of digested the whole thing because I was, like you said, like, it's just, you just never see that.
Right.
And, I kind of want to say, like, I celebrated it a little bit. Like, part of me is I'm like, I don't know, good for this guy.
Well, it's like with the Oilers, like, somebody else is making the mistakes and it's not your guys, you know? So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
And what's funny is that at the same time, so this happened just before the Christmas break, and, At Christmas, I received We Want Fish Sticks, a new book by Nick Hirshon about the Islanders' fisherman rebrand and that whole era. The book is excellent, by the way. I mean, this has been going around for a while. I'm sure you've heard it. Take my word for it. It is excellent. I know a lot of older Islanders fans out there are probably wondering, why would I want a book on this terrible jersey that I hated when it came out? I promise you, the book is about way more than just this jersey or the uniform. It's about that entire era, starting with this sort of dismantling of the 93 Prince of Wales Conference Final team right up until the sort of, you know, mid-Mike Milbury point when they, you know, changed the jersey back to this sort of wavy jersey with the original logo on it. And it's great. There's a lot of great stories in there about the the mascot and the abuse he took and how they basically redesigned the uniform without asking anybody if this was a good idea or not. So, spoiler alert, it was not a good idea. But Mike Milbury figures pretty prominently in this. And one of the things that I, you know, you kind of forget going back, you know, this is, we're talking about 20 years ago, is that he said some really nasty things about his players in the paper too. And he was the GM and or the coach at that point. And, like, you know, he talks about, oh man, I don't know if I flagged it here, but, you know, he had some pretty pointed comments about Wendell Clark and Wade Redden, who had only played in the preseason and with the Islanders and other guys. They're just like, I mean, I remember there's, it's not in the book, but we all remember when he talked about Eric Brewer playing like he was sniffing glue out there. I mean, it's that kind of stuff. And I gotta be honest, like, that didn't work for that Islanders team. Again, the Stars have won two games since their CEO, you know, the president's meltdown. I don't know if that's really a way to sort of build confidence in your team, you know, your players. I really don't think that, because it sure as hell didn't work for the Islanders. Mike Milbury had a lot of other problems going on. But when I read that, the Stars thing, and then a couple of days later read it in the book, I was like, wow, that's a pretty weird coincidence that I'm reading both these things at the same time. And we'll see how it turns out for Dallas. But did not turn out well for the Islanders, for sure.
Yeah, I'm really excited to read the book. I also got to say, like, I was super disappointed in Alan Hahn, who wrote the book with Peter Boddy about kind of just like the Islanders come back after that period. And he said that Nick Hirshon had just rebranded it and called it something different, which, I mean, I remember like kind of just coming across Nick's Twitter page a couple of years ago and being like, his like bio said, I'm researching a book on the New York Islanders from like in the 90s and being super excited for it. And just that Alan Hahn completely missed the plot that, like,
yeah, no, it's definitely, dude, not that. I read that book too, and this is definitely not me that too. Book.
and I mean, I love that book for what it was, but I mean, this is like this. First of all, who cares? Like, if you're a fan of a sports team, you want a book written on every season, right? You know, like, get a grip of yourself. So I'm very excited to read it, and was disappointed in Alan Hahn because I liked him when he was doing Islander stuff, which he hasn't done in a while. So I don't know why he's even, yeah, you know, butting it anyways.
Yeah. No, but the book is really good. And yeah, it covers a lot of different stuff that Fish Sticks, they do share a same title, which is a problem, but they're both, you know, definitely worth reading. And again, the stuff about how they rebranded their jerseys without really asking anybody was really, really kind of eye-opening. And if you're not an Islanders fan and you're somehow listening to this podcast and you want to know about why they did that jersey rebrand, again, the book will tell you that too. So definitely check it out. You can pick it up on Amazon. That's where I got it. I got it in time for Christmas and I read it over a couple of days, and it's definitely pretty cool. But hopefully things work out for the Stars. Oh yeah, that was another thing too. So Jim Leitz, the president of the Stars, who said all these crazy things, Islanders fans may remember him from the Big Shot, the John Spano 30 for 30, because he was interviewed in there real quickly. Before he bought the Islanders, Spano tried to buy the Panthers and he tried to buy the Dallas Stars. And Jim Leitz is in there talking about how when he came around to kind of tour the Stars facility and talk about maybe buying them, he kind of put everybody off Spano, and they kind of were like, this guy's a real weirdo. And that didn't really go anywhere. But I just thought that was kind of fun. I'm like, yeah, I remember this guy. I remember him talking, but weird. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's like a book that I can't wait to see other people reading on the train. Too,
like, yeah. You know? No, they should. It's pretty cool. And if you do that, that's a good sign that the Islanders are back in the public conscious, you know, trying, people are getting excited again and jumping back onto the bandwagon. Okay. Let's see. We covered all that. There was another trade today. Oh yeah. The Senators, and Canucks made a couple of trades today. They sent a bunch of players and Anders Nilsson,
former Islander.
Yeah.
Yeah, former Islander Anders Nilsson is on the move again.
Yeah, and Tom Pyatt, who is not an Islander, is on the move. And they were both going to play each other too, which is kind of funny. So it was kind of like a – I don't know if it was exactly a shopping cart trade, but it was pretty close to it because they were going to – the Senators and Canucks were going to play each other. So there you go. So, yeah, lots going on. You know, team coming out of the Christmas break, going into the All-Star break at the end of the month. Then right around the corner is the trade deadline, and – we'll have to see what happens. The Islanders do play the Blackhawks on Thursday. I spoke with Sam over at Faxes from Uncle Dale, formerly known as the Committed Indian. Great, great, great Blackhawks blog. Sam is one of the best. Super smart guy. You should follow him on Twitter. And you could look for my preview. You know, he asked me a few questions. I mentioned to him, and one of the questions was about Jordan Eberle. And I was like, well, he's hurt now, but Josh Hosang has been playing in his spot and he looks pretty good. So, you know, there's a chance that Eberle could be on the move at the trade deadline. You know, I don't know. I part of me thinks that they wouldn't interrupt the chemistry like that, but you know, Lou has never been one for sentimentality. And if he can get something for an expiring asset that he's probably not going to resign, I have a feeling he'll do that. So we'll have to kind of see where that
goes. That thought definitely crossed my mind a little bit. Just want to speak about chemistry one more time is that, kind of give a little credit. I mean, I still don't think Leo Komarov is particularly great at hockey, but just like he's growing on me. And it's so funny because the fact that the people in Toronto or fans, especially like those who are more analytically slanted, just hated him and basically couldn't wait for him to get out of town makes me like him even more. the stuff that's popped up of him, like the little videos and just the way people talk about him. He just seems to actually have an unquantifiable like effect on the team, which is pretty cool.
31 Thoughts today by Elliot Friedman talks about how they've apparently put Komarov's locker next to Josh Hosang's, and Josh apparently also sits next to Leo on the planes and stuff like that. And the reason is basically the same reason that they did it in Toronto, because he has a good rapport with the young guys, and I guess keeps them focused on the next game. And you know what? I'm over it. I'm really over people complaining about Leo Komarov. He's playing. They're winning. I'm not going to sit here and like belabor this point. He is what he is. And if he keeps Josh Hosang laughing, good. That's all.
Yeah. And he keeps, he's keeping me laughing too. Like, and he's, like there's, I guess, you know, we really have gone so far away from those type of quote unquote glue guys that, like, you know, maybe these guys know what they're doing when, you know, they, I mean, obviously signing them to 4 years deals, as we've said,
right,
not the brightest, but like this guy obviously has an effect on the young team. And, I love rooting for him. I don't care if he sucks. I fucking love rooting for him.
yeah. I'll worry about the 4 years later, you know, when there's somebody,
right, yeah,
on the horizon that could be playing in that spot. But for right now, the spot is his, and he's playing there. And the same with Filppula. Like, I mean, the guy's got 9 goals and he scored another one the other night, and they're doing their thing on the penalty kill. I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with what's going on. And, you know, are they perfect? No. And this is back to what we were saying before. This is not a talent-laden team, but somehow they've given up the least amount of goals in the NHL. They're a point out of the playoffs. And I think we all would they just shut out the Leafs 4-0 in Toronto in the first game against John Tavares. And I think all of us, had you asked us back in the summer if we had signed up for that, we would have said, hell yeah, sure, I'll take it. And, you know, we see where it goes from here. But so far.
And how about, also another quote from Trotz about those guys, is how he, which is just shows like how honest he is, and that he really hits the right notes. He says, like, I wasn't really on board at first with signing those guys. Like, I needed to be convinced. And we're like, yeah, so did we. And we're like, he's like, and I'm kind of convinced. And we're like, yeah, so are we.
Yeah, that was a great quote too. I needed to be convinced when Lou signed them, but there they go. But I mean, they seem to all be on the same page now. So there you go. So we talked about it. Blackhawks, Blues, Hurricanes, Rangers, and then somebody else. Tampa. Ooh. All right. That's going to be pretty rough. That'll be another real, I mean, all of these games are tough, and they can't really afford to drop too many of them. But a game against the Lightning is like a game against the Leafs, only probably 4 or 5 times worse, because the Lightning just, they haven't lost this season, basically. They're just kind of a machine at this point.
But we are, you know, we're big Lightning fans. Anyway, so we're always rooting for the Lightning because they, you know, that means one other team in that division doesn't go.
Yeah.
So.
And it's also going to be a good measuring stick to see where they're at. And I'm sure Barry Trotz will have those guys prepared at the right time. I don't like that it comes a day after playing the Rangers, but it is. I mean, it's hardly a road game. I think they play Saturday night at the Garden, and then they're home. I guess at Barclays against the Lightning. So not much of a road game, but that's going to be a tough week. So we'll see how they come out on the other side. Okay. Anything else? Did I miss anything?
You know, I just, one other thing too, is like how cool it was to see Anders Lee in that Maple Leafs game. I think at one point him and Tavares went into the corner together, and I was just like, this is kind of cool to see him, you know, wearing the captain jersey. And basically, he won. It wasn't anything big, but just like thrilled to see that too. Like, this guy is like, I love him too. I love this whole team. I mean, Nelson, like the emotion that Brock Nelson's showing this season, and maybe a lot of it has to do with the fact that his bottom line is affected. Like, these guys are, they're all like so bought in.
Yeah.
And I'm serious when I said, like, I haven't seen a team like this, like, on the same page in so long. And that, like, that even that team with, like you said, like, this team has like a defensive structure that obviously the team that went play the Capitals had was basically built on offense and basically owning the puck and scoring. And this team is built on just being a team that is hard to beat.
Yeah.
And we showed that to the Leafs the other day, which was really awesome.
At the risk of sounding like an old man, seeing guys like Josh Hosang and Brock Nelson back checking is like heaven, you know. It's like, yes, this is what it's supposed to be, you know. And
yeah, that's what like these good teams look like.
Like
Andre Burakovsky's back checks. You know, like the guys on the Penguins, they back check everybody on the Lightning.
Yeah,
you know, that's
all back check.
You're just, this is just, it's just a team that, like, I honestly have no idea how far they'll go. Both in a good way and in a bad way, which is awesome.
But I think because I think about it, we all think about that. I mean, let's be honest. Like, we all wonder when the ride is going to come to a complete stop, because that's what we're conditioned to. But the thing I love the most about Trotz is that he seems like he's going to put a stop to that as quickly as possible. Like, there's not going to be these sort of like lingering losing streaks. I mean, the Islanders, it's funny, because before winning 7 of 8 or whatever it is, they had lost 4 out of
5. That also doesn't sound real.
Yeah.
When's the last time the Islanders won 7 out of 8 games?
Yeah.
It might have been last season, but it just doesn't ever feel like that.
Well, they've won. They've gone on streaks like that before, but usually it's come before or after losing 8 of 9, or you know, dropping 10 of 12.
That's a better way.
I knock on wood, Barry Trotz isn't going to let those kinds of streaks happen. You know, if something, you know, you lose a game, hey, you lose a game, it happens. Maybe you lose 2 in a row, you're in a bit of a funk. I get it, but like, you know, those kinds of streaks that we've seen under previous coaching regimes, I don't think are going to happen. Again, knock on wood, I hope I don't jinx them just now, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be the type to let that happen. And good, that's the way it should be, and he'll pull whatever strings. Again, we should qualify that when you're winning, everything looks like it's working great. So, you know, we are kind of skewed at that point, but you know, they are going to hit a snag at some point, and it's going to be interesting to see obviously what they do when that happens. But so far, as long as they keep on winning and keep their head, you know, in the playoff picture, They're going to start turning some heads eventually, and people are going to start taking notice.
And it's actually nice they haven't started to. I've started to notice they've turned coaches' heads a little bit. And obviously that's because they're getting, you know, tons of film on the Islanders before games and stuff. So like Phil Housley talked about how he sees like the Islanders as a team with like really good structure, and they're all kind of on the same page or whatever.
Jared Bednar called them one of the best defensive teams in the league. And I was like, wait, what?
And he's right. excuse me, Jared, you mean the best in terms of that. But, it's just funny to hear teams talk about that, because last year and the year before, they're like, oh, you know, they got, you know, a couple of really talented guys up front. Like, you know, you got to be able to play defense against these guys. And now it's just like they are a puzzle that is really hard to solve. And, you know, on any given night, like the Islanders have basically turned these games against better teams into coin flips, which –
is pretty good.
Pretty good. A foreign feeling.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, there you go. All right. So a couple of things real quick to get to. Everybody make sure again to go buy We Want Fish Sticks, book by Nick Hershon. It's really great. You should check it out. Make sure to read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Rest in peace to 3 guys who we learned passed away today. Super Dave Osborne, otherwise known as Bob Einstein, great comedic actor, was on Curb Your Enthusiasm recently as Funkhauser, and he's hilarious. I can't believe he's passed away. Daryl Dragon, otherwise known as the Captain of Captain Tennille fame, also passed away. Great underrated musician, wrote great pop songs for a long time. And of course, the great Mean Gene Okerlund of WWE fame, whose son Todd was an Islanders draft pick and played a few games for the Islanders, has passed away. Mean Gene, if you grew up like I did with WWF, I had Mean Gene's action figure. Like that guy meant everything to me. How he kept a straight face talking to these guys like Macho Man Savage and Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper, I have no idea, but that is a skill that very, very few people had. And he has, unfortunately, all 3 of them were 76, by the way, which is kind of an odd coincidence when that happens, but rest in peace to all of them. And we'll talk again on the other side of these next few games. Please tell everybody your Twitter handle again.
It's the Big Lebowski, 2 E's.
The Big Lebowski with 2 E's. You should follow Mike there. Our Sneaky Athletic. Still, you should go there. You put the word anxiety in the discount code box. You save 10% on your order. Got some more Nassau Coliseum games coming up. They got the Fort Never Lose stuff. Check it out. SneakyAthletic.com. Save 10% with anxiety. It's pretty cool. I was kicking around ideas for a Trotz shirt today. I don't know. It's tough. I like just the quotes. I don't want to go the silhouette of this head route. Good work on somebody who said they should have a bobblehead with no neck. I think that's a great idea, but not for a shirt, for like an actual bobblehead figure. I think that'd be pretty cool.
You know those like big I don't know really how to explain it, but I'll do my best. Like the DJ who's like a mouse, who's got like a mouse head.
Yeah.
Like those kind of like, I don't want to call them a mask. It's like basically the top to a mascot.
Like a big head, yeah.
Like if you just showed up with those big heads of Barry Trotz's head, I think
you know what?
You know, those would be beautiful.
At Halloween, I noticed they sold like foam heads at Walmart. So like minion heads, but it's like a foam head that you can just put over your head. But like they had like a minion one. They had some PJ Masks one, stuff like that. Those would be great because they're big and they go right on your shoulders. So if you can make one that looks like Barry Trotz and give them out to people at games, that would be the greatest thing ever. I don't know.
I honestly just want to know more about Barry.
Yeah.
Like, what he's doing day to day. Like, what is his daily routine? Is he probably like gets, he's probably a morning person. He's probably up and like running around, and I would love to watch him grocery shop or something. You know, like I want to see him go about his own business. The guy's the best.
The 31 Thoughts article you should check out, and he has a great quote. He was talking about like what he sort of teaches the Islanders, and he got very zen, and he said it's one thing. What he said was, it's the same thing I said to Alex Ovechkin. Never stop chasing. I call it the year of enlightenment. It's a whole life thing. The importance of giving you my best. That's not going to change. I'm happy to enjoy this journey too. So basically, we get the enlightened Barry Trotz, the zen Barry Trotz. I'm just going to keep giving you my best, and it's going to have to be the best. It's going to have to be good enough. And don't ever stop chasing that dream, because you can get there. There's always another dream right around the corner, but enjoy it and be enlightened. There you go. Something like that. I think that's what he meant. Wow. Anyway, yeah, very profound. We love him. He loves us. It's pretty cool. And yeah, we'll see where they are next week after a couple of games against the Western Conference and then those dastardly Carolina Hurricanes again. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it. Thanks for giving us a week off. We're back now, and we will talk to you again next week. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.